Now the Sunday Spin continues on 720 WGN. Here's Rick Pearson.
Good Sunday morning and welcome back to your Sunday Spin as we enjoy a bit of a respite from the rain that's supposed to be filling our rivers and streams. You heard the forecast from Dave. Let's all be careful later today, but enjoy the respite while it lasts. Joining me now on the phone is Andy Menar. He's Democratic State Senator from Bunker Hill. Andy, thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, good morning, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Well, and I wanted to have you on because I noted that a group of legislators, including yourself, are looking for action in the veto session up ahead to cap out-of-pocket costs for a 30-day supply of insulin at $100. And I'm not sure people are aware of the price spiking that's been going on for, you know, life-saving pharmaceuticals like insulin.
It's quite profound. I think that would be kind of my opening understatement for you this morning, Rick. Just to put it into perspective, I was having a conversation with my father last night, and my mother after our local high school football game. And my dad told me last night that his out-of-pocket costs for his prescription medication related to his diabetes is $11,000 a year. That's what he pays out of pocket to literally stay alive. And I think that's kind of the straight up truth about what we're after here, is that for so many diabetics, especially type 1 diabetics, this is not an option. Either they pay whatever it takes for their insulin, to purchase it and then administer it, take it to manage their health, or they die. So the answer to the question, how much would you pay to stay alive, or how much would you pay to keep your child alive? The answer is whatever it takes. And the problem here that we're trying to tackle in this bill is to say, you know what, families shouldn't have to go through that just because pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies and PBMs, which are the middlemen in between those two entities, you know, that integrated healthcare chain, they know the answer to that question too. They know the answer is people will pay whatever it takes. And that's what we're seeing today in the market. And this bill intends to take a profound step to address a profound problem and cap the cost for not all insurance plans, but you know, hundreds of thousands in the state at $100 a month for a 30-day supply.
Well, I mean, when you cited your father's $11,000 a year out of pocket, I mean, you're $1,000 a month, and that's just, you know.
Yeah, and I would say that's a more a much in many cases a more reasonable cost. I've talked to constituents where their out of pocket costs are a lot higher than that, because keep in mind, diabetics also take other, they're prescribed other things to manage their health, not just insulin. So we know that when diabetics manage their health well and don't ration insulin, or if they're not forced to take a different type because an insurance company says, you know what, we don't trust your doctor, we know better about what type of insulin you should take. That happens all the time, every day in Illinois, where an insurance company says, we're going to tell you what you have to take. Forget what your doctor said. Costs go up for everybody when diabetics don't have the ability to manage their health. So we think that's why this bill is a good step in the right direction for healthcare public policy in the state. And I think that's why it has such wide support. I'm working on it in the Senate. Representative Guzzardi is working on it in the House, and we're hoping to have it called for a vote in the very near future.
You touched on a term that I'm not sure a lot of people understand, PBMs, and what their role is in this issue.
Yeah, it's, we could spend probably the remainder of the show this morning, and then
I guess
it's complicated.
It is complicated, but I mean, have is there too much power delegated to them?
Of course there is. Of course there is. These entities don't sell anything, right? They've wedged their way between the people, that the folks that make prescriptions, and the folks that dispense those prescriptions, and the folks that prescribe those prescriptions, and the folks that insure those prescriptions. They've wedged their way in many times using government contracts to be kind of the purveyor of all those things, driving the cost up. There is no question about that today. You know, a couple years ago, there was still, you know, this was kind of a unknown entity. What is a PBM? What is their role in terms of my family getting quality health care? Nobody knew. Now we know. The light's been shown on these things, these entities. They're embedded in our Medicaid system. They're driving out independent pharmacies out of business to reduce competition. So that's part of this equation. That's why we think just a rock solid $100 a month cap is going to, you know, we're just going to look at all these entities, PBMs, pharmaceutical companies, and insurance companies, and say, you know, the cost for the customer is going to be $100.
And just, I mean, that makes it universal. I mean, for most of these insurance companies and people covered by insurance, but you, as you touched on PBMs and independent pharmacies, I mean, that's where I first became aware of, you know, their involvement mm-hmm. here, and the, you know, in the kind of, I guess, favoritism given to larger pharmacies, larger pharmaceutical dispensary companies, I won't use their names, mm-hmm. versus, you know, the independents that are, you know, that's the Main Street rural America.
Yeah, and they give preference or deference because they're the same company in many cases. So I you know, a couple years ago, working on that bill, that reform bill that is now law, Representative Greg Harris, majority leader in the House, co-sponsored that bill along with myself in the Senate. I had asked one of the largest, actually the largest PBM in the country to prove to me that they don't pay themselves, because they're also a dispensing pharmacy, a higher rate for the same drug as an independent pharmacy in my district right across the street. And I'm still waiting for that information. I think I don't have it, because I think I know what the answer is. So, you know, that's a business enterprise, right? That's a business enterprise. And they've figured out a way, in this case, and that I'm citing, to use government contracts, taxpayer money, to drive their profits up and to stamp out independent competition. This all relates back to insulin and all these other high-cost drugs that frankly, people that live on my street in Bunker Hill, in every community in Illinois, the suffering, the financial suffering, and the stress that is happening at kitchen tables every day in Illinois is almost immeasurable, because prices have run amok. And so this bill is intended to be a small but profound step to say, you know what, we've had enough of this, and we're going to take action now.
We're speaking with Democratic State Senator Andy Menar from Bunker Hill. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson, the Chicago Tribune, here in the WGN Skyline studio. Joining us on the phone is Democratic State Senator Andy Menar from Bunker Hill. We're talking about legislation that he plans to advance in the fall veto session, which begins next month, regarding capping insulin prices at $100 for a 30-day supply, in contrast to what is being charged currently. I also wanted to ask you about other things for the veto session. And, you know, as we saw that Governor signed most of everything. I mean, there's not a lot of truly concerning vetoes. But, you know, obviously veto session also time for new issues. Earlier this morning, I had Brad Cole on the show, executive director of the Illinois Municipal League, talking about the governor's task force on pensions and the Municipal League's desire to try to see some consolidation of the downstate police and fire pension funds. Do you see any action on that at all?
I think that's a tough one, Rick. I think that's tough. I think it. Well, I do believe the conversation's going in the right direction from more of a global perspective. Very robust conversation happening right now about not just that issue with municipal pensions, but many other issues. I think it still has some work, but I do think things are headed the right way. I mean, I would also note that, you know, the governor did only veto a handful of bills, but I feel obligated to say that's because we have an environment in Springfield where people can actually sit down and negotiate in good faith, which frankly just didn't happen for 4 years. So when folks sit down and talk and air out their differences and are free to do that without fear of retribution or punishment, you get negotiated bills that are bipartisan in nature, and you get fewer bills than are vetoed by the chief executive. So I think that bodes well for what Mr. Cole said on your program earlier this morning. And we have a conducive environment for compromise and for working together. That's why I'm optimistic about us being able to tackle these big challenges that still lie ahead, definitely.
I know another issue, certainly Chicago, looking at some changes in the casino gaming law as far as the taxing structure after that report from the gaming board that raised questions about the viability of a Chicago casino. A lot of concerns there. That does that open the whole can of worms again?
Yeah, that would be my concern, frankly. That gaming bill, you know, which was a very big piece of what was able to bring together our $45 billion rebuild Illinois capital plan, which absolutely was a must for our state, wouldn't have gotten done without the leadership of Governor Pritzker. That gaming bill was a piece of that. Wouldn't have happened without it. And I'm hesitant to open up that bill simply for the reason that you stated. Things tend to work in this direction. You open up one piece of a large bill that was negotiated down to the word in the law. Every word in the law was literally negotiated. When you open up that door, people tend to try to shove things through it. That would be my hesitation. But nonetheless, we don't pass massive pieces of legislation like the gaming bill that don't have what we describe as trailer bills, things that come later after things have settled and the law is in place. It's not uncommon to have trailer legislation. So striking that balance, I think, is going to be the challenge, not just for Democrats in the legislature, but Republicans as well, because ultimately this was a bipartisan step in the right direction for the state.
Now, granted, for the upcoming city budget here in Chicago, casino revenue is not really part of that as it faces a huge budget deficit, yet it's something that the mayor has talked about and consistently kind of looking to Springfield, though it's not exactly clear necessarily all that she wants, particularly in regards to pension.
Yeah, and I should probably take the opportunity this morning to say that the budget crunch is being felt by municipal governments all over Illinois. I mean, Chicago obviously gets most of the attention because obviously it's the largest municipal government in our very diverse state. But you know, I would tell you today that the city of Springfield, for example, their property tax levy doesn't cover their pension obligation year to year. And those things are very much a part of Springfield and Decatur both. Those same conversations, to a smaller degree, but just as important, are very much a part of the city council meetings in Springfield and Decatur, two downstate cities that I represent. So while we focus, and the media tends to focus, and you know, much of our activity seems to focus on the city of Chicago's budget challenges, we should also remember that cities large and small across Illinois have similar challenges, just to a smaller degree. I think therein lies the path forward not just for the city, but frankly for every municipal government. How do we put that together that that would represent some attractive public policy change in Illinois that people can get behind? So it's not just a regional question. That's how we crafted school funding reform, for example. It became less of a regional issue, and we made it a statewide issue, reminding people that there were underfunded schools in the smallest of towns, not just Chicago public schools, but the smallest of towns in southern Illinois.
And not to play the regionalization factor of demonizing Chicago against the rest of the state, that kind of thing. And certainly, the mayor has talked about the fact that this is, Chicago. What's good for Chicago is good for downstate. If we all work together as one state, progress can be made. It's just a matter of what are the fine points of that progress.
Absolutely. And, I think I've probably said this a couple times on your show, Rick, during the 4 years we had, the push for school funding reform, the easiest play in the political playbook in Illinois is to play regional politics, right? That's the easiest play in the playbook. I mean, if there were a book written how to ramp up the political rhetoric in Illinois, this would be the first chapter.
I think imposing a tax on the term Chicago bailout might be what would bail the entire state out. If you heard it that many times,
you're right. And I don't engage in those things. I don't find them productive. We have big public policy questions for every city in the state, and our job as a legislature is to help figure out a path forward, so that we can improve the state that we lived in. We've made incredible progress in the last year, but we still have big questions ahead. And again, I don't want to sound like a broken record here, but the atmosphere in Springfield is very different than it was just a year ago, and that gives me a lot of hope and encouragement that we can put forward answers to some big questions that we face today in the state.
That's Democratic State Senator Andy Menar from Bunker Hill. Senator, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
You bet. Thanks for having me.